You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It's Neil Atkinson with Lizzie Doyle, Stu Wright and Mike Kearney. We're going to talk about Sunday, obviously, against Tottenham Hotspur, the referee, the VAR, the shape of the game, all of that to come. Plus, we're going to talk and look ahead to the game against Leicester, not least because I very much do expect it to go ahead. We'll have a brief chat about that, but we're going to keep this relatively low maintenance on the COVID, other than where it obviously impacts upon Liverpool's decision-making processes. It is a very difficult game to talk about without talking about the referee and the video assistant referee, so we'll get it out the way early. Stu Wright, there's three decisions that dominate the shape of the game. Two of them much more, so I would say Kane and the penalty not given on Diogo Jota. Separately is the Robertson red card. It is worth remembering it's 2-2 at that point, and I think Liverpool do look a little bit tired. I'm not going to say for a second that that stopped Liverpool from winning the game, but they were obviously made it harder. But those decisions do interconnect. The referee is dreadful. In hindsight, the video assistant referee is probably worse.
It's so frustrating to be talking about it. I hate the fact that we're having to talk about it, but we've got to. I mean, we're talking about an elite sport that we absolutely love. It means so much to everyone. It's filled with elite athletes at the top of the game. It's got a global audience of millions around the world. And we've got fellas, you know, who are approaching middle age with... who are not elite, who are in control of proceedings, you know, and it's they can get away with it because they're a closed shop. I mean, I've had a good think about this over the weekend. We've seen a number of poor refereeing performances, not least last week against Villa. We've seen what's happened with Newcastle and Man City as well. You know, it's not just Liverpool, and you know, I just don't think that the PGMOL is fit for purpose in the modern game. It just doesn't meet the requirements. It's not an elite performing organisation. It's not held to account. I don't understand how, in this day and age, when you consider the market forces involved around the Premier League, when you consider what a capitalist venture it is, you know, there's... you've got an independent organisation here, I say independent, they're funded by the Premier League and by the FA, and the Premier League and the FA have no alternative service provider. There is no competition. So the PGML know that it's a closed shop. They should be a completely independent body, even in the existence of individual matches. They should be independent, but they're not. They don't have loyalty, you know, openly anyway, to any particular team, but they do have a loyalty. They have skin in the game, and that is to each other. You know, we've seen things like Carragher go down to the PGMOL and you know, you look at their training sessions, and it's, you know, it looks very organised and everything. They all have a great time, they all have a great laugh, and they all bond. Well, they can't leave that at the door when they come and referee a football match. You know, when you're talking about people like Chris Kavanagh, you mentioned that the VAR was a worse performance than the on-field referee in Tierney, and I can't disagree with that. But no one can tell me, no one can convince me that that isn't partly affected by Kavanagh's weakness and resistance to overcome his loyalty to a fellow referee on the pitch and questioning him openly. He's got skin in the game. He's backing the guy on the pitch, and instead of actually backing the game.
But in that instance, Joe, I'll stay with you for a minute. Therefore, then, he refers to the Robertson incident. And that's where the Robertson incident's linked. Like, it's easy for me that this is where this is difficult, because we can have a long chat around clear and obvious and what the referee can and can't see and what he can or can't perceive. And so, therefore, what becomes a clear and obvious error. But I don't see how one of those instances where he's given a yellow card in the first place is any more clear or obvious than the other. And that's a, he is prepared to correct him there. I wonder if that's because he didn't correct him earlier on. And in hindsight, he sat there, he's sitting there thinking that came on probably was a red card. For all I know, I don't know, you know, within Stockley Park, does he have access to his phone? Does he look at his phone at half time? Or that, do they have a chat at half time? We don't know. I don't know the answer to this. Maybe other people do, but I don't know the answer to this. But, does that become part of this? That's what I find really difficult. I don't know quite why. Why is one a clear and obvious error when the other one isn't? For me, I feel as though that's very much the wrong way around. I'm relaxed about Robertson's red card in one sense, but I do feel like that is the other way around in this one.
You're right, but I do think that we don't... You're right in what you're saying there, that yes, that happened, but also that we don't know what access he has to technology, whether he's getting prompted, whether...
Or he just has a half-time chat and he say wasn't sure about that came on, you know.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think that... Again, you know, you could take the side of, well, there's a loyalty to the man in the middle end because he's thinking, well, I've stitched them up earlier on, I'm not going to do it again, perhaps, you know what I mean? But then that's inconsistent within the game, never mind broadly over the set of fixtures. But I also think that there's, because there's no accountability, that is what promotes the level of arrogance within the organisation. You know, there is a level of arrogance that is disproportionate to the ability on the pitch that is demonstrated by these officials. And that comes from the fact that they know that they will not be challenged and that they can come up with whatever ludicrous excuse. And we've seen it so many times where controversial decisions have been given over the years and all of a sudden someone's briefing some random rule or some random interpretation of a rule. We see it yesterday with the idea that Jota stopped. He didn't stop. But all of a sudden Peter Walton, you know, an ex-referee in the media is saying he did stop as well. I'm sorry, if any, I defy anyone, watch the footage, he doesn't stop. He literally just pulls his foot back to shoot.
It doesn't matter whether he did or didn't stop.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, if he did stop,
are you
is
meant
he?
To take a shot if you don't stop?
And if that's you get to choose point. To stop, you get to choose to stop
exactly.
If you're a football player.
Just because you stop doesn't mean you should be taken clear out by two players.
You stop when you change direction as well. There's like, just Lionel Messi, when every time he stops and turns and goes the other way, if he gets fouled, is it not a foul now? What are we talking about? I mean, it's just nonsense.
I've never played though, isn't it? At that level. It comes down to simply rules that don't translate to something actions on the pitch.
So I don't think it is about them whether or not they play to that level. I don't think it helps when the manager says that in one sense. But I think that what then happens is I think it's more they're trying to actually reinterpret the rules on the fly when they're put under pressure without speaking publicly on the record. All this stuff that's done through briefings and little words here and there. And I don't think it helps to say, oh, well, you haven't played the game at that level. I don't. In that, well, what that means then is we're just going to drive ourselves mad and never find referees. But for me, Mike, you know, the point about this is, you know, 9 times out of 10 a referee just gives that as a penalty anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the first thing that Klopp goes to and everyone will go to and say in terms of you've not played at this level. He probably just means that you just can't expect that the rule means, well, you stopped. Whatever rule that is, like, you've got to take the common sense up angle of it. Like, what is that? And okay, not playing at that level, that can happen in the park. You play footy in the park with 5-a-side and you go to your mates, right, you stop there. You just go, what are you talking about?
Exactly.
You just took me out. So that's probably why people get frustrated with it and probably why you do have the snobbery around maybe a bit of the saying, well, you haven't played at this level or whatever. It's just you haven't, it's probably never happened is what they're trying to say to you. That's never happened to you in a football pitch. Doesn't matter if it's in the realms of Liverpool, or bloody whoever you play for, 5-a-side, you've got to have had something like that, experienced it, and then gone, well, that's wrong then. But it's like, it's, as you said before, about the consistency in the game. You can't, Chris Kavanagh can't be sitting there saying to himself, well, I don't think that Kane's a red card, you know. And then almost like with 45 minutes, the other side of it, in the next half, well, yeah, we'll have a look at that again. Surely, even though the Kane thing's in the past, he must be thinking, I can't then go and say, look at that again. Because they were both given his yellows at the start, weren't they? And then turned over again. So it's like, where does it sit in the consistency going in your job? Right, I've done this in the first half, so why should I not do this now in the second half and just leave that as a yellow? You can't give one with the one that before that hasn't been given. If you we're all right with the Robertson red card if Kane's gone, because you go, yeah, fair enough, it could have been red, and look, Kane got done for something similar, but you can't then go, no, that was a yellow and that's a red. I think that's where Klopp is just going, look, it's just, it's a frustration, isn't it? And he probably, as you said, you know, he's not going to come out and go, oh, it sounds, he's just frustrated, and he's gone, well, we need people at the level and stuff, and all, that's what he's saying. He's just frustrated, isn't he?
I thought he spoke quite well as well on the whole post-match.
Oh, brilliant, I thought, for that long one. I thought it was
really interesting,
yeah.
And it was honest and refreshing, and that's one thing we've been saying about Klopp for the last couple of weeks now, with everything he's been saying, is that he actually just sort of spoke what he really felt in the moment. I thought it was quite refreshing to hear. It sort of reflected what we felt. You could see him going, well, what's his problem with me? You know, Klopp took that really personally, didn't he? Like, what have I done wrong? And I think, like, I know this gets said so many times, but, like, we've got to remember that it's all subjective. So, like, this is the thing. Like, it's two human beings, and, like, one has one view and one has another. So, like, who's right? And it's, like, sometimes I feel like with the referee, they feel pressured by VAR to go and like take the VAR decision, but then in this instance it was just like the VAR wasn't even making the calls. I mean, if I'm right with the Jota one with the pen, he didn't send him to the telly for that one either.
No,
did
no,
he?
No, not at all.
So that's another thing, like, why, if they were unsure, what I've seen in the last few games is when they have been unsure, as much as it's disrupted it, and again, this is the thing with VAR, we've slagged it off, I suppose, by going, oh, we're sending them to the telly every 2 seconds. But at least, you know, you've probably come to a bit more of a clearer decision.
Is that where the clear and obvious thing is, obfuscating things?
But that's what I'm saying,
everyone.
What is clear and obvious? And this is why it's no longer an excuse for me. It's like, I feel like it's just the thing, like, with the Jota saying, oh, he stopped, why didn't he just come out and say, like, it'd be better to just say, listen, that's just him saying, I made a mistake and I didn't see it. Do you know what I mean? That's all that is. Not he stopped. That's a load of rubbish. We all know it's a load of rubbish, and so does he.
But I think that the problem with the I made a mistake thing, Lizzie, is now that's gone for them because of the television.
Because of VAR.
Because it could
They've
be
got
the
VAR to eradicate mistakes.
And that's why I think this has all become, it gets messier and messier, this. And then you start to have chat around clear and obvious. And that's why, again, there's certain times where I can find a little bit of sympathy for them in a number of ways, but then that's when you get this really weird set of almost retrospective briefing that appears to now sort of come out, which is, you know, in this one, for instance, you've got basically Peter Walton writing all sorts of shite in the Times, which is that basically what saved the England striker is that Robertson's foot was not planted. God. So what saved the England striker is the idea...
Well, saved Robertson from a broken
exactly,
leg.
Exactly, saves him from a broken leg. And then the idea, referees do study players and formations ahead of the game. They're aware certain players need to be dealt with proactively. Kane does not fall into this category, Stu. There's this idea that this is going to make... I don't know who this is for. I mean, you know, this sort of briefing, is this for the average general fan rather than active sort of supporters within there? You know, the main reason the Athletic understands, the main reason they are not punishing Kane more, was that Robertson was jumping when fouled. You know, all of this, the more words that appear, the more you end up just going, my God, will you fucking people please stop trying to act as though there's some sort of rationale or justification for this? But they've got to come up with something, because there's a video assistant referee now, rather than just going, well, the referee had a bit of a bad one, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the more they justify it or try to justify it, you know, the more that they, you know, they dig themselves a hole. I just think that what you're saying there, you know, it's no surprise to us. We've all thought it, that referees have prejudice against certain players and bias towards certain others. We've all thought it for a long time. We've benefited from it at certain times. And when you benefit from it, you're less likely, aren't you, to make a fuss about it. But I think ultimately they know that their judgment is not fit for purpose around consistency. And the reason we know that they know this about themselves is the way in which they have tried to protect the opaqueness of their process. They're not transparent. So for me, the obvious thing to do, Neil said before about how we don't know what's happening in the VAR referee's ear, or, you know, if he's got his phone or whatever. He should be... there should be a camera on him, and whenever he speaks to the referee, that should be in the corner of our screen, and we should be able to hear it. Mic the referee up, mic the VAR up. Absolutely, but they will not do it in football because the PGMOL will not go along with it. They are an organisation that is unfit for purpose. They are not being held to account, and nobody is actually taking a look at this and thinking, well, the detriment that it's having on the game. Put the fella on screen, mic them up. We can have the, can hear the conversation. But there's a perfect example of why they won't, and it's John Moss from a couple of years ago when we played, was it Tottenham again? And he gives a penalty against Liverpool.
Oh, the Kane one.
And he goes to the assistant referee on the lines, and he says to him, you know, I didn't see it. Yeah. I need to know. Did you know? And the Lino says to him, I don't know if it. And he just goes, F it, I'm giving it. And he gives the penalty.
Oh, it might be the Lamella one.
He gave the penalty on vibes.
It was insane. Yeah. It must have been mortifying for the PGMOL to actually have that broadcast, to have that picked up. John Moss, I mean, to be fair, I've thought he's an absolute bumbling idiot for a long, long time anyway. Actually, and I give him more credit now for seeing that, for actually being a bit sharper. But I just think it's a perfect illustration now of the Machiavellian nature that this is being kept opaque.
Do you think, I'll come back to you one more time and then we'll move on and talk about the football. Do you think they're just shite? Because this is my one of my sort of, like, I think Tierney, you know, he just may not be very good. And I think that they've all got different strengths and weaknesses. I think some of them do big decisions better than others. I think some of them get smaller decisions wrong more consistently. I think some of them are bad when there's time wasting going on. I think some of them get gamesmanship, some of them don't. They've all got, you know, if you did the top Trump's cards in amongst them all, I think Tierney might be shite, and he's had three big matches of us this season. He got the game against City, where he genuinely, if we're all honest about it around this table, should send Milner off.
Yeah.
He gets the derby, where he picks up two yellow cards for diving, to be fair, on the Blues. So this isn't the idea, I think, that he hates Liverpool. Yeah. He gives two yellow, but then the third one, he books Robertson when the lad dives in front of him as well. There's another couple of mad bookings that Liverpool get in that game as well, to be fair. And then there's this one. I just think he's crap.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You know, this idea, you know, that I'm saying to you about this,
like, they're not a shadowy cabal working against Liverpool's interests.
They're doing it is because, not because it's like pure evil entity against Liverpool, it is not because it's protectionist, it's a self-preservation here, you know what I mean? They are looking after each other, and it was a terrible performance amongst a number of terrible performances that I've seen him do, and other referees, and we could name them, shame them, but ultimately, you know, this idea of keeping it opaque, having the lack of transparency, is not because of some, you know, evil grand plan, it's to do with the fact they're trying to protect and hide the fact that they're not consistent, and they're really struggling to find any kind of objectivity in these close calls.
Okay, I don't know what changes. The retrospective language from people like Walton does not help, but anyway, we'll move ourselves along. It may be that something does change somewhere along the lines. I thought Shearer was interesting on Match of the Day. Tottenham 2, Liverpool 2, then the shape of the game. Obviously, it's impacted. It would be different if Harry Kane had got himself sent off when Tottenham had just gone 1-0 up. But they have a very clear counter-attacking game plan, Mike. It reminded me a lot of Atletico away, to be honest with you. The Atletico away were, they had the policy of look to nick it back around our own box from Liverpool and then just send bombs and see what happens next. And look to run channels, look to shift a little bit. The other thing that they had that Atletico Madrid didn't have yesterday, Tottenham, was the fact that Liverpool's whole midfield was very disrupted.
That's it.
And Tyler Morton was six.
Once the team sheet drops, the plan becomes even more entrenched for Tottenham, doesn't it? They know then that they've got that sort of team that really hasn't played in a game together, so they'll try and pinpoint that. And at points yesterday, Milner and Keita were all right, and were decent enough, but at points as well, they were also really, really part of helping their plan really, really advance. The goal comes from a similar one that they should score a couple of minutes before, same move basically. And we struggled to get to grips with it, But having said that, we don't feel like we're out the game. It's we know what we're facing here, and we know we're missing one of the best midfielders in the world who would stop them counter attacks just without even thinking about it. You know, he's nicknamed the lighthouse for a reason, isn't he? By Pep Linders, you know, he's all there to be seen by everyone in the team, sweeps everything up, and is generally great at that. You're not going to have him for every single game we play, so you know you've got to cop for that sometimes, and we do. We try and make the best of it, but it's Tottenham's main way into the game, isn't it? Let's be honest, and they have took it there, and it was. Look, Tyler Morton is obviously going to be a footballer at a high level. He's got a lot to recommend him going forward. His away performance in Milan was up there. It was really, really good. But this is a different speed, probably, that he's ever been used to. Really, the game was sort of at his level, and he'll learn a lot from that the weekend. Without saying he was awful, he was having to sort of swim faster than he ever has done, sort of thing. And you know, that's one thing at the whole weekend's performance for me was we needed to get on that, really. You know, you are against 11 players who were entitled to play and exploit what they want to do. So it happened to us while we managed to get back into it and sort of get through it, sort of thing. It didn't absolutely wash us away.
The difficult thing for Morton, Lizzie, watching the game and then watching it in hindsight, is the thing where I think he struggles the most is the thing he can't fix overnight, and that's the physicality. Mm-hmm. I think that they get an awareness relatively early where he is physically. It doesn't help. He gets a yellow card. The yellow card he gets is a difficult one to swallow, given the fact that Kane's just been booked for his tackle about 5 minutes before, and you're like, those two things cannot have the same punishment. Does come into my mind, it's mad that those two things have the same punishment, but they do. But I think that then sort of means that he can't, even if he wants to sort of go into the red, take a couple of risks, he's got to stop doing that, Morton. And I think that all of that just leaves him just a bit at sea, to be honest with you, and he's not helped with bits and pieces of what's going on around him.
Yeah, I agree, and I think probably all before it, I mean, you could probably have guessed that he would have picked up a yellow at some point, do you know what I mean? In that position and at his age and his stature, I suppose sort of how early on he gets it probably really doesn't help. And there was a moment where the ball sort of, like, he's challenging for the ball, doesn't he? He goes to head and he just completely misses it. And he was, listen, it's all right to say he was a bit out of his depth. That doesn't mean, like, he's a terrible player. That doesn't mean the lad's not got potential, but this was just a bit too much. And I think, like you said there, I think they would have played a certain way anyway. But also, like, let's say he was alongside, I don't know, a Henderson.
Well, Henderson and Thiago
Milner,
either side.
Or Henderson and Thiago. How much difference? I mean, I absolutely take the point on Fabinho, but I do think it's a lot more than Fabinho, because I think Henderson and Thiago do a lot as well in terms of, like, I think what Thiago does brilliantly, sort of underrated, is really taking the sting out of things as well, sort of like touch go. And it was just completely and utterly unbalanced, and you know, that's not his fault. He was put in. He was probably the best person to play that position, because I'm not being funny. I don't think I'd want to see Milner playing in the six. He's probably the only person that could. And listen, it was frustrating to see how much went through them. But if I'm being honest, I really don't know how much more it could have been helped, bar maybe, obviously, like I say, Milner and Keita giving away a good few balls, especially Keita for one of the goals as well.
I think if you're asked
the manager, you know, he often talks, doesn't he, about protection when we're building attacks, maintaining that protection behind. And I think, you know, in hindsight, he'd probably look at it when rewatching the game and thinking that Tyler Morton and the defence actually didn't have enough protection from the other two midfielders. Yeah. And I actually think the manager could have helped them out by making a tactical tweak. You know, we've maintained the idea of a single pivot in the same way that Fabinho is our lighthouse. And, you know, that's a lot on Tyler Morton. That's a hell of a lot. And I did feel that when you look at their counter-attacks, each time both Keita and Milner were caught too high up the field. And, you know, Tyler Morton and our back two, our centre-halves, they were exposed. I heard a lot of talk, actually, about on Five Live last night around the difference without Van Dijk and Liverpool, you know, this happened because of, I think, if whether Van Dijk had been there or not, I think the same stuff would have happened, because he would have been exposed in the same way. That Kanate, who I thought was excellent, by the way, his best game for Liverpool, him and Matip were exposed time and time again because of the lack of protection from that midfield. So I think if we'd have gone to a double pivot, maybe if he'd have put Milner alongside Morton,
even at Oxlade-Chamberlain for Keita, though, like, I think if you know you're playing with Morton as your six, okay, Milner, we know he's experienced pro, we always say, you know, you're definitely going to get a good 60 out of him, but Oxlade-Chamberlain played Thursday, didn't he, if I'm right? Now, whether that's a fitness thing, I don't know. I'm not the doctor. I'm not in the room. However, for me, Oxlade-Chamberlain provides a lot more legs and he's much better defensively. Like, you know, we know he's played like wing back and stuff for Arsenal before and sort of becomes the, you can argue in terms of like talent, or almost like the sort of natural fit for when Henderson's not there, that sort of right side of midfield player, which, by the way, he's done quite well the last few weeks. Not saying it would have changed anything, but again, that's another thing with the players he's got available. Could he have not offered a bit more protection from the start by putting a Chamberlain in there instead as well? I mean, it's all if buts and maybes, isn't it?
It's if buts and maybes, Stu, but I think first and foremost, the manager's plan for this season is he's not taking any backward steps. Indeed, his solution to what was actually happening to Morton wasn't to get Milner and Keita closer, I thought, second half. It was actually, well, until he makes the sub, it was actually to get the centre-halves to be even more aggressive and make sure they were winning that first ball ahead of Morton, at times coming all the way with the two centre-forwards. He's very much always going to want Liverpool to take a forward step and look to progress it better, where I think he will be frustrated. But again, it's not like they've got a lot of football in the legs, either of them. It's where Milner and Keita were losing it, the nature of how they were losing it, Liverpool losing it in ways just sort of around that patch 30 yards from the Tottenham goal and then finding themselves really vulnerable. I think that'll drive him mad. I think the other thing, and again, this is me just talking, and it's an important thing, this, because it's always the manager that's tested, but given the fact that they sort of start to miss Morton out with the ball, they stop passing to him, they start to just sort of pass around him a little bit, and I don't know if that would have helped him or not, because it might be that the passing, him getting his foot on the ball, because we know he can pass the ball, might actually have built his confidence up. But I'm just sort of watching it thinking there's no reason, again, but other than the way the manager thinks, which is he structures all their approaches, why you couldn't just put Joe Gomez at six. If you're going to start missing it, if you're going to start missing the lad out with the ball at his feet particularly anyway, then all you look at, it's not the same as necessarily having a third centre-half, but the idea of someone then who's going to be able to win the ball a little bit better. And I was just sort of watching it thinking, but this is my thing, the point I'm sort of driving at here is that the manager, you've got to dance with the one who brought you, and the way the manager structures his thinking is certain things he's not going to do. He's not going to play Joe Gomez in the six. He's not that manager. He's not going to go to a back
that's
three.
That's what Mike was saying yesterday. Yeah, he doesn't change his foot. He's 4-3-3, flat 4-3-3.
He's not going to, and this is the nature of the manager that he's choosing to be. Like, this is his decision-making frameworks, I think. And I think at times it can be difficult for us to sort of get on board with that, but part of how he gets us to where he gets us in the first place is that he doesn't deviate from, I've made these decisions, this is the framework I operate in, so it's Morton or playing Milner. I'll go with Morton and I'll put Milner there. It's Milner or X, it's Keita or Chamberlain. He doesn't from nowhere go, I'll throw a bit of a mad one in. He is not Benitez, and that's sort of his choice, and that's his long-term choice, not his short-term choice.
Yeah, we've seen in the modern game the last five to ten years maybe, that's actually, you know, the rise of these of the greatest managers in the world now, they're somewhat different. So you mentioned Rafa before, and we could throw Mourinho, we could throw Ferguson, and where these guys, I think the longer that like a Klopp or a Guardiola is in post, the longer they're in post, the less likely they are to ever tinker with the system. You know, they're zealots. They are the best at what they do, partly because they are zealots, because they are ideologues, because they are so extreme in their views. And as you say,
they're not game-by-game problem solvers.
I was looking at that game going, where's the compromise here? You know, we're exposed because of the lack of players that we've got. We're still playing the same system. But there's absolutely... So the fullbacks were as high as ever, if not higher. Okay, and they were both brilliant going forward. But that was also increasing the lack of protection for the two centre-halves. So at some, you know, as much as he was telling the centre-halves to go higher as well and nick the ball in front, at some point when you're playing against a player like Son, with that level of pace and ability to carry the ball, who has been instructed to tactically expose you in exactly the way that you're afraid of, you know, I would compromise. I'm a weaker man than Jurgen Klopp. Let's be clear. There's a reason why he's in that chair and I'm in this one. Although it's a very lovely chair at Tor Towers. But, you know, fair play to him. I wouldn't have made that move. I look at it and I'm uncomfortable with it, and I think something had to give, something had to be a compromise made. But you know what? We've not lost the game, and you could argue that maybe we've not won the game because of decisions out of our hands.
In the same way, Mike, that I think feeds through to his players. So this idea that you do your thing at all times, and you don't, and if things aren't going well, what we don't do is we don't change our thing. We do our thing harder. And I think that you see that with the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper's one massive mistake away from being man of the match. Not just man of the match, but putting in the sort of goalkeeping performance that you go home, if you've been to the match, and you tell everyone about afterwards and say, you won't believe what he did here, you won't believe what he did there. He's one mistake away from that. But that's the nature of the tightrope that he walks.
Always with Alison Becker, always. I mean, people probably won't really talk about it much, the Newcastle game, because it's a comfortable win, but he makes a save at 2-1, which is a quite frankly stupid save. That is strong arm, keeps it out, it should really go too well, or could go too well with a lesser goalie. We go up the other end and make it 3-1 later on, and it's done. He does things like that so often for Liverpool. The fact that they're so rare, these mistakes, that when they happen, you're like, well, wow.
But they are huge. But when they do happen, the problem with them is that they're massive, aren't they? They look massive.
They look, and if that was your first game, you're watching as what's that? He's crapping. He's really good at doing some things, but he'll just throw one in like that. And there's no context of it. It does look really big. The Leicester one in his first season looked massive, and he gets all the hoo-ha in the media about it, and he just goes, I'll just never do it again. I just won't do that again. I won't be caught doing it again, sort of thing. And I think he backs himself, and you've got to back yourself if you're going to have a howl like that now and again, to be able to just go, well, that's that now. Can't fix that. It's done. The way I'll fix that is just not do that again. And he backs himself, and his team will back himself, and his manager will. And a part of why we probably are the way we are in terms of Klopp not really changing things and like maybe going to a 3 at the back or whatever, 5 at the back, is because he just knows it's a functional machine. You know, we go through all, it's well documented, and I feel like I bore myself talking about last season because we all know what happened, but he eventually just goes, you know what, I'll just play centre-half, midfield, and it worked itself out. No matter what the level of centre-half we had there. So he probably feels validated in terms of just going, well, we'll just get through here in midfield. And as Stu says, you know, decisions go our way. We probably win the game there. And you're thinking, how have we won that with the midfield we've put out? But with the goalie, it's like, he's got the confidence to be able to make that mistake, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely, that completely does.
So I know I can make this mistake and be absolutely fine because my manager trusts me and all my players trust me. And next week, he'll probably go and make a worldie against Leeds, and we'll go, yeah, that's our goalie, and we want him for the next 5-6 years, which luckily we are going to be able to because he's signed a deal.
You can't get one without the other with him, I think, Lizzie. I think you've got to, you know, when he was coming for that one, I just presumed he was going to sweep it away. I was actually literally having the thought process of it. Liverpool have tweaked this, he's been unbelievably aggressive, he's just coming for everything, and he's going to get everything. Oh, fuck, he hasn't. And that was what was sort of going on in my head, was that, and you know, I think it was almost at that point, he's done about 3 of them, and it was almost like it was just too easy for him at this point, you know, in that really strange way. Maybe he's almost thinking, where's he putting it, as much as anything else. That, you know, that's the level of him. You obviously don't want him to make the mistake, you really don't, but you can't have one without the other.
No, you can't. And when he come out for it, I didn't feel like it. I didn't go, oh shit, because of the previous view. And almost like if you're doing sort of retrospectively, if he wasn't to come out of his box like that, you know, and he stays, but then, you know, there's not enough chance for the centre-halves and that to get back, then it still could have ended up in a goal and people are calling for him, why didn't he come out and da, da, da. He's just, I don't think we can overanalyse, I think he's just unlucky. I think he's really unlucky, and also it's not as if he's up against like some championship forward, you know what I mean? It's Heung-min Son. He's brilliant, he's absolutely excellent, and he does well with it as well. And I think what, like, we got away with a lot, and I think just to touch on what I think Liverpool got away with a lot is I mean, obviously that save that, which I actually didn't clock on till quite late on, the Dele Alli one, was a save. However, Liverpool were extremely lucky yesterday that almost Tottenham weren't as good as, say, I don't know, the likes of City and Chelsea, because a lot of those chances was being put in the back of the net. And I think that's also something that not a lot of people are talking about, is, you know, they should have been 3-0 up in the first half. Obviously, our holy goalie comes to the rescue yet again. And as soon as sort of one or two of those chances went amiss, I straight away said, this is going to be an Alisson game. It's got to be, because he's your last line of defence. And again, Klopp in that sort of post-match interview alludes to, obviously, this is what you get when you have an offensive goalkeeper. This is how we want him to play. And he was very clear in what he said. And I don't think any of us can blame him. It was a howler, but because of everything else he'd done, do you know what I mean? Especially, like I say, that Dele Alli one in the first half. You know, it just is what it is with Alisson a little bit.
With the exception of the aberration of Son's goal, there's an argument to say it's a single greatest performance for Liverpool. I know that seems a bit of a mad shout in a random game that's finished 2-2, but actually, you know, we're used to him getting us out of jail once or twice in a game. That can often happen, you know.
Scored two or four times.
I was about five or six.
Yeah.
Honest, I mean, the level that he had to go to for those five or six, I mean, it was incredible, and they were different types. They were unbelievable shots.
The smothering one on
the floor wasn't.
I mean, it was one of the greatest all-round goalkeeping performances I've seen, save for that aberration.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
There was that, but one of the things I think on a couple of occasions, there was stuff that would have been pulled back for offside, where he does brilliantly.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he does brilliantly, but he'd have been pulled back for offside. This is the area where Liverpool missed Van Dijk more than anything else, was that Van Dijk has that aura of calm to everyone else to go, that would have been offside, don't worry about it, we just crack back on. Mm. And I think Liverpool did miss that a little bit, because everything got a bit more frantic, although both centre-halves got a bit more frantic, and that, so I, like, you know, I'd rather have had Fabinho available than Van Dijk. I'd rather have had Henderson available than Van Dijk. I possibly would even rather have had Thiago available than Van Dijk in hindsight, but the one thing that Van Dijk does is he gives that air of calm after those, where he gets to say, that one wouldn't have counted, boys, we just all crack on and we just reset. And I do think we all got it, and I think even in the way in which, like, the way in which you're watching the game, we're all watching the game at that point, is they could have had this many, whereas as I say, repeatedly you look at the replay and go, he's just off. It would be given, but it's easy for us to say that, and we get replays and they don't. Just quick, Stu, I think the fullbacks both are unplayable in different ways over the course of the game. Robertson's movement, I think, because he runs loads and works hard and is fast, people are underestimating how smart this movement is at times. It's so clever, repeatedly, all the time, and obviously Arnold's quality is just off the scale.
Yeah, I think they're both incredibly intelligent. They're both real students of the game, and they've been well schooled by the manager. They completely understand what is asked of them, and they're willing to take the insane risks that Jürgen wants them to do and deliver on that. The quality from Trent now, and we've seen more and more with his left foot as well. I mean, it's just with ease, isn't it? Mm. It's just nonchalance. Incredibly impressive performances from the pair of them. It was really interesting to see that the game was almost bookend by an Andy Robertson header on goal from a Trent cross. You know, he had the one right at the beginning, and then he gets the goal at the end. And I think that might become more and more of a feature. That seems like too much of a coincidence to me, really. I think Robbo's probably saying to Trent, you know what? I'm free all the time, you know. You might want to look for me. You pick me out, I'm free every week.
Rather than just switch,
Trent is, Mike, for me, he's almost, I mean, he is redefining the position, obviously. I don't think he's redefined it because no one else can do it. All the players have redefined it by being more direct or something like that, but no one else can do what he's doing. It's remarkable what he's doing, and I thought he was Liverpool's best player by a distance.
So I said last night, and it sometimes can be a little bit simplistic, can't it? If he was Brazilian, would he get more credit? Because, you know, with Dani Alves and all the credit he got for redefining the position, but he Trent Alexander-Arnold's picking it up and taking it another 50 yards on from what redefining actually means. He's just going, well, you reckon this is redefining? Have a look at this. Like, I'm playing. The chat around moving him into midfield is mad, isn't it? Because he literally stands out in midfield half the time.
Yeah.
Like, he's literally putting De Bruyne numbers up, and he probably even surpassing this season, really. Not just because De Bruyne's not played, but if you look at the 90 minutes per whatever, I bet he's right close. He's tremendous, to be honest. And the fact that we're producing players like that with the ability of Trent, it's almost unfair on Andy Robertson that we've got an even better fullback on the other side, because they were both incredible. You know, the Robertson ball for the goal, which is moving to get there and anticipate the thing is different, but the ball's just you are actually just going to score off this Jota, because if you don't, it's what are you doing?
Yeah.
It's right on the spot, and that's, we've got it from both sides, and literally whether he's playing right back or not, the conversation is always around his defensive ability, isn't it? Which is probably a boring conversation to be having, because it feels like it's people's only way of criticising him, so therefore they must criticise his defence. But when you look at it, his actual numbers and interceptions and actual defensive actions on the pitch, when you're watching him, the right up there is the top level right back, as well as everything else you get with Trent. He runs games, and no one really does that from the position he plays.
Manager's first sub, Lizzie's quite interesting. I think it's really strange in that Liverpool put another attacker on the pitch. They take off the weakest link in the half of the midfield, again without being too harsh on the lad. But it felt as though they actually became less dangerous. You'd have thought it'd be the opposite. Do you think he was just trying to get Salah going, first and foremost? Because Salah wasn't very involved at all.
Yeah. I'd done the team talk on Friday, and to be honest, even when I heard about the midfield maybe being less strong, I would have thought he would have started Bobby with this game, in terms of like what Bobby does to help out a bit with dropping a bit deeper, helping out with the midfield. So I thought at some point he would come on, but I did not think it would be for Morton. Yeah, maybe to get Salah going. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're any team on this planet, what are you going to do? You're going to make sure you're covering that right-hand side with Trent and Salah, aren't you? You're going to try and just smother them. I was surprised in that I thought it would leave us a lot more open, which it didn't actually seem to be the case, really. Like you say, I suppose it was the weak link in Morton. But
I think they just hold those two midfield two back. I think the fullbacks do go forward. Robertson scores after that point, but a little bit less advanced. I felt like we just sort of went, we'll attack with those four for a bit, and these six can just look after this for a bit. And I thought we were trying to take the sting out the game a tiny bit.
And also probably playing a bit of a different system as well is a bit strange for them. Like I say, it's usually one for one. It's usually Jota for Firmino, or Jota for Matt, or Bobby for... It's different. And I think when your back's up against the wall a little bit, trying to settle down into something like that as well is probably quite difficult for them. He done all right when he come on for me now. I don't think he absolutely set the world light. I mean, when you look at the sort of, we're talking about the change of body shape, but like when Tim McCass and that come on, then it really did change as to who was playing where, don't get me wrong. But you're probably right, but it wasn't Salah's best game by a long stretch.
They find themselves three behind City, but City did lose there. Stuart will point that out. The manager was at pains afterwards to say, you know, you've got to be happy with it. You've got to be all right with a draw at Tottenham. In the flip side of that, though, is they have got to make sure that they do keep the pressure up. They've probably allowed themselves their only possible slip now until all the way possibly till the end of January, to be quite honest with you. You know, this is the business end of the season. That might sound like a bit of a funny thing to say, given the fact that we're not even at the halfway point, but City are putting the hammer down. They've not had remarkably tricky opponents, but they're still going and getting the results. And we've got to keep them honest in there all the way through. If we're going to have any chance, we've got to make sure that they know the scoreboard pressure as much as we do.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. I think this time of year, particularly this season, there is a danger that this could be where the damage is done and where the league, not could be decided, but, you know, it could be a long way back, you know, if we're not at our best. And I think Manchester City are doing what Manchester City do. They are, when they get into this kind of groove, they apply such mental pressure by just the sheer volume of goals that they're scoring against teams. But the thing is, though, they're still Manchester City. They still do have flaws, and you know they could hit a wall one week just out of the blue and get beat 1-0. You know,
that's the strange thing about them. Yeah,
it can happen, but if that doesn't happen, you know, and they continue to absolutely wallop teams whilst Liverpool are struggling with... I mean, we do have a depleted squad in comparison. We've seen to have been hit with COVID more, but we also have less numbers to start with than Manchester City. And I do think that, you know, without a little bit of luck, like we saw yesterday, things could be in danger of slipping away. So we've got to make sure now that we recompose ourselves, strengthen up and make sure we take care of business on Boxing Day.
That point is really important in that, like, that sounds like a really obvious point to make, but that you're 3 points behind and not four. It's a one game swing. Do you know what I mean? And I think, like, you know, if you're going to just be completely obvious about it, that's your game against them. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like still in your hands a little bit, whereas if you go to 4 points, all of a sudden it's a little bit more on the edge. And I think, like, what worries me going ahead in terms of, I'm not saying like what worries me is that, I mean, let's say these games all still do go ahead, you know, from Wednesday onwards, is that straight from that straight red from Andy Robertson now means he's out for Leeds at home, which I'd have been fine with. I would have been fine with Tsimikas playing that. Leicester away probably would have been all right with Tsimikas, but it's at Chelsea away for me. I think that will also be maybe something. I'm not saying that I don't have, obviously we'll have other players back and stuff like that by then, but you know, we've just had a big conversation there about how important our fullbacks are, and I think to have Andy Robertson missing against, again, if it goes ahead a game, I mean, we don't know what Chelsea might then pick up a bit of form by then as well. I think that could be a bit of a crucial point as well.
Leicester home on Wednesday, Mike. I don't think there's room in the calendar to kick this back. I'll be very surprised if it doesn't get played. There's precedence for this. Pre-COVID, we played Villa with kids, the Club World Cup. Post-COVID, Villa played us with kids in the FA Cup. I think that the powers that be will have the attitude of, can you get any 11 wearing your shirt on the pitch if you can play the game? What are you expecting in that context from a Liverpool point of view? Because I actually think he might go a little bit stronger than people might anticipate, in that I think he could probably do with getting some time on the pitch for Firmino and Gomez at the very least from the start.
Yeah, he's got to have Firmino and Gomez in the 11. You would say now with the Robertson red card, because it's competition specific, isn't it? I think so. He'll probably play left back unless he wants to give Tsimikas minutes, with bearing in mind we're not playing until the Sunday anyway, so it might be okay, but you generally imagine now, and we still don't know where we are with AFCON properly, do we? So he'll probably be wanting to get some sort of minutes in Minamino's legs again at the Leicester game. It has to go ahead, really. There's literally no point in the competition if you're trying to postpone it and push it back. It needs to happen, and he probably needs to take the semi-finals and make them one leg again, and just be a bit sensible around that going forward with that competition, to be honest. You're looking at, will he throw Morton in again? Try and, you know, get a bit more.
I think he will.
I think he's got to, hasn't he? Really, to say to him, look, that the weekend was the weekend, and there we go. You know, you're going to play against Leicester now. Get a couple more minutes back in your legs. Get a bit of a positive, more sort of muscle memory going forward again for next time we need you. I think it's more than strength of character for the lads as well. You know, it'll just do everyone the world a good to give him minutes again. Plus, we're probably not going to have Fabinho, Thiago, definitely not. We have to see where Henderson is with his illness. But I would imagine it's not going to be like a complete kids team. You'll probably see Kate Gordon on the bench again, I imagine.
Or start.
Or possibly start, maybe, yeah. But yeah, it's not going to be like the... I'd be shocked if it was like Salamane, Firmino up front. I do expect Minamino.
I think it'll be Firmino, Minamino and Gordon.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, which I'd be fine with, by the way. Minamino needs minutes as much as Firmino, and Gordon's an exciting prospect, isn't he? And you would imagine, I don't know where Leicester are exactly, but they're probably still up in the air in terms of injuries, not just the COVID situation they've had injuries and illness as well. So, I mean, what sort of 11 are they going to have? Frankly, wouldn't be too worried about our 11. I think we'll have a good enough 11 to go out there. And
is Origi fit?
He wasn't on the bench, so
he's the. I mean, from what's been discussed there, he's the only obvious, you know, difference I'd bring to the table. If he's fit, I'd like to see him play. But other than that, I think very much Firmino, Minamino, and Gordon.
And it'll be a youthful midfield. I think it'll be two youth players and perhaps Chamberlain. But
probably a young centre half as well.
Next to Gomez,
I mean,
yeah.
Naturally you would have done probably Gomez and Phillips, but obviously Phillips is out, isn't he, with his cheek.
I just don't think he's had enough minutes in his legs over the course of the season so far for him not to play. I think, you know, another even if he gets an hour under his belt.
And also, we don't know exactly what date Van Dijk returned back as positive. So Van Dijk actually could be back for Boxing Day or the 28th for all we know.
Nico,
so
it's not a bad chance.
It's more, yeah, who plays at left back now? Because this is the thing for me. It's like, we can say, oh, well, let's get some minutes in Tsimikas's legs. But then you've got that really big risk then of, like,
do you think, would he do Gomez at left back?
Don't think he would. I think he'd play him centre half. He needs to play centre half game. I think if Gomez gets played left back in this game, he'd be rightfully pissed off.
He's got, I mean, Robinson's got three games off now, you know, which is probably about 3 days over the Christmas period, by the way. But he's got three games off, so I think, you know, giving him the start, I think, is fine.
The other thing they'll know before they kick off is whether or not they will be playing on the 28th. It seems as though that's the round of fixtures that is up for grabs in terms of being postponed. Yeah. They'll know that as well. I'm expecting us to go through because I think that they'll play the game under any circumstances, and Leicester aren't in a position, I don't think, to
Leicester have cancelled a couple of days with COVID cases.
So I think Leicester might be in not great shape. I think they'll go through. But obviously, we're all saying that with a lot of vagaries at the moment. Thank you very much indeed. It's been the Anfield Wrap. To Stu Wright, to Lizzie Doyle, to Mike Kearney, and to Andy Heaton for flawless producing. It's been a pleasure to be with you on this Monday. Looking forward to Leicester, looking back over Tottenham. Huge frustration with the referee, but this is the way a season goes sometimes. The best thing to do is to bite down, go again, get results. We'll see you after Boxing Day. Sports Social Podcast Network.